This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. On this Friday afternoon, welcome to On Target St. John's. My in-studio guest today is Richard Alexander. He's the Executive Director of the Newfoundland and Labrador Employers Council. Good afternoon, Richard.
Good afternoon.
And I've been talking to various people about the economic situation here in Newfoundland and Labrador and trying to get a variety of voices because we tend sometimes to get, you know, the same voices over and over again. And I know that you like to shoot from the hip. So I said, I kind of like creating those situations where people have to stop and think about something for a moment, and you're one of those kinds of people.
That's good.
So the Employers Council, and the reason why we invited you in this week in particular is because you held a summit this week, and it was about transforming our future. What did you learn from that?
Oh, my God, it was fantastic, fantastic event. One of the best things we've ever done, I think. You know, the business community is very concerned about the fiscal situation. You know, government's plan is not working. All the numbers are pointing in the opposite direction. We're moving into the days of having billion-dollar deficits again. And we wanted to sort of have a conversation about how we can motivate our politicians to act on this. And so we brought in Janice McKinnon, who's the former finance minister from Saskatchewan. When they hit the debt wall, they were unable to borrow money in the bond markets. And many people have suggested we're on that road in this province. And she talked about, and the message that she gave was look, you don't wait until you hit a crisis before you start to take steps to correct your fiscal situation. Because when it happens, you won't realize that it's going to happen. And when it happens, you'll have to act very, very quickly. And she talks about getting into a situation where they had to close 50 hospitals. And she said, you know, Newfoundland is going down that same road. And it's important that our government and the people of the province recognize that if we plan for modernizing our health system, our education system, delivery of government programs and services, that we'll get to a much better place. Right now, there's a lot of doom and gloom out there in the business community, in the public, within the public sector. People are operating in a constrained environment with a lack of stability. They don't know what's going to happen in the future. And if government came forward with a credible plan with targets and details as to how they're going to resolve the fiscal situation, what you'll begin to see from her perspective and what they saw in Saskatchewan was you'll see hope get back into the picture. And people will be, you know, feel very positive about the outlook of the province. You'll see businesses starting to invest again. You'll see stability back in the public sector. And that's where we want to be as a province. We want to be the best place to live, work, and do business in Canada. But in order to do that, we have to admit that there's a problem and start moving forward to try and rectify that problem.
Now, budget after budget after budget, I've been attending budget lock-ins for decades now. And, you know, there's lots of facts and figures, lots of numbers, lots of charts, but still it's not quite clear what it all means. Is there any way to distill that and present a plan that will be consumable, so to speak?
Yeah, well, you know, the government, after 2016, they came in with their 7-year plan to return to a balanced budget. And so we've been watching that over the last number of years. And one of the guests we brought in was the chief economist at the Conference Board of Canada, Mr. Pedro Antunes. And they look at the provincial finances right across this country in every province. And what they said was, we're the only province that has targets, but there's no detail in our budgets about where those cost reductions are going to come. And our government hasn't been hitting their own targets. So as an example, so this year coming forward, their government's plan was to have a deficit of $250 million. The projection is that we're actually going to get close to $1 billion or hit $1 billion deficits. So we're back to the days of billion-dollar deficits. And, you know, boiling it down, how do you make sense of all this? All you have to do is listen to our own province's Auditor General. We have a massive spending problem. We bring in more revenue per capita than any other province. You listen to the bond rating agencies. So Moody's just downgraded the province's credit rating. These are not good things. That's not a good sign. And so what we've been asking, this conference or this summit that we were doing is about is saying, look, politicians need to level with the people of the province, say, look, we have a significant problem here. We're going in the wrong direction. They have to develop a credible plan. And once they do that, we'll see some really positive, there'll be a light at the end of the tunnel. We'll see some positive things happen in the economy and business investment. And we need to get to that spot sooner rather than later.
So what's realistic? What can we look at realistically? I mean, people don't want to hear about cuts and slash and programs and all that sort of thing. I mean, we still want to be able to enjoy what we currently enjoy. And a lot of people think we should be doing more. So what's the answer? How do you make that balance?
Well, that's the problem. One of the things we wanted to do with this summit was we want to try and reframe this debate. So this debate has been about our fiscal situation has been framed as two extremes. So one extreme is we keep borrowing money year after year after year, which is what we're doing, and then we go bankrupt as province. The other extreme is, and you see that government frames it this way, other special interest groups frame it this way, say, oh, we can't do we can do nothing with our province. We don't want to decimate the public sector. We don't want to do, you know, close hospitals. We don't want to do any of these things. And it'll cause chaos in terms of health and education and how we do things. And it's what we're saying is we're not looking, either one of those extremes is not where we want to be as a province. We need to be somewhere in the middle. So if we are providing health and education and government services in a way now that we can't afford, and every year we continue to borrow to be able to do that, what we have now is what's called a vicious cycle. So we're borrowing more and more every year. The interest on the province's credit card is now so big, it went from $900 million to $1.4 billion over a couple of years. That is, in essence, cutting services now, because it's crowding out what government has available to spend on health and education. We spend more on debt now, debt interest on debt, than we do on education and income support combined. That's not a sustainable direction. So what we'd like to say is let's get back to a virtuous cycle where we're running balanced budgets. And by running balanced budgets, that means that we're not putting as much money into debt servicing as we are today. And that's money that can go into things like health and education. But in order to get there, we need a credible plan that modernizes how we deliver government programs and services in this province. So that we can get out of this environment of constraint and get back to a positive outlook for the people of the province.
You mentioned the spending problem. Is it solely on paying down the debt, or is it Muskrat Falls and other things? What is our problem with spending?
Yeah, so if you look at government's operating budget, the annual budget for the year, the vast majority of that is just related to delivery of programs and services. Muskrat Falls is another major issue. But our ability to mitigate the impact of Muskrat Falls is going to be heavily impacted by the fiscal health of the provincial treasury. So, and you've heard us say this, and you've heard the Auditor General say this many, many times. So as a provincial government, as a provincial treasury, our province brings in more money, more revenue per capita than any other province in Canada. Just think about that. Any other province in Canada. And at the same time, our government spends more money on programs and services per capita than any other province in Canada. And we still can't balance our budget. And the budget deficits are going in the opposite direction. And, you know, what we've been saying is that direction and that things getting worse year after year after year, a billion dollar deficits for the size of our population is really causing a lot of doom and gloom. And as a result, we're seeing out migration, we're seeing a lack of business investment, we're seeing a lot of concern in the public sector, and it's the lack of a credible plan to return us to a balanced budget and move us forward that's causing that doom and gloom. We need to get away from that.
Richard Alexander, the Executive Director of the Employers Council, my in-studio guest this afternoon. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back on VOCM's On Target. My guest today, Richard Alexander, the Executive Director of the Newfoundland and Labrador Employers Council. And we previously chatted just before the new year about you called 2020 a pivotal year for the province's growing deficit situation. Before we get into that, though, we talked a little bit about service delivery in Newfoundland and Labrador and what needs to be done to address the spending problem that we have. Janice McKinnon had suggested that in Saskatchewan, what they had to do was they had to close hospitals, and they had to close quite a few of them. And she seemed to suggest that that's something we should consider here. Is that a wise move? What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think her message was that if you wait for it to become a crisis, the people of the province were going to be forced to do that. And she didn't close just a few hospitals in Saskatchewan. They closed 50 hospitals. So what she was saying is that, look, if you're spending more on health now than any other province per capita, except with the exception of Alberta, yet our outcomes are not as good. And if you look at how we're different in Newfoundland and Labrador in terms of healthcare spending, we are an outlier. We spend more on hospitals, on physical buildings, than what other health systems do per capita in across Canada. So there's, I think what she's suggesting is that there's an opportunity for that. And one of the interesting things about my job is that I get to talk with a lot of different government departments. You develop relationships with these people, and they tend to reach out to you, and they want to have conversations with you off the record sometimes about what they're seeing, because they want to see improvements. And
we get a lot of that too, by the way.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like a journalist. Yeah, people leaving in brown envelopes, you know, on my desk. I don't get that, but that would be nice if somebody did want to do that. But here's what the experts are telling us. So any politician that tells you that they can deal with this fiscal crisis without reforming the way that healthcare is delivered in this province either doesn't understand the problem, or they're actually lying to you, because it represents such a large chunk of our government spending. And the pressures, the demographic pressures on our healthcare system because of the aging population are so large that we're going to have to do something eventually with it. So what Janice McKinnon was suggesting is that, look, you know, the most expensive way to deliver health is through acute care facilities. And we have more acute care facilities in this province than other provinces in Canada. Hospitals are very dangerous places for people to go. You develop infections. It's very expensive to deliver these things. So what other provinces have done is they've looked at delivering services in other ways, through long-term care facilities, through private clinics, through other methods, if you will. And it's the approach that people that work in healthcare, both the doctors and people in the Department of Health have told me, is that what we need in this province is we need to, for lack of a better word, look at specialization. So it doesn't make sense for us as a province to have one hospital with a full complement of staff watching empty beds just in case something happens, and another hospital that's an hour down the road or an hour and a half down the road with those same type of beds with wait lists. It doesn't make any sense. So it's about looking at all the different communities and all the different regions in our province and saying, look, we don't need this type of surgery to be performed in every single acute care facility we have in the province. But what this region needs is it needs an ambulatory care center. It needs an ambulatory care center of excellence, or it needs more community health because they have an aging population or whatever. And we're going to move some of these surgeries to other areas where there's a higher volume. And the beauty with doing that is that if you go to physicians and have a surgery performed by somebody who is doing that surgery 30 times a month, they're better at it, and you get a better health outcome than somebody who does it once a month. So that's kind of the idea behind the modernization of healthcare. It doesn't mean closing facilities, but it means using the limited resources in the best way possible to get the best possible outcomes for the health system. And what the folks that work in health tell me is right now we're trying to be everything for all people in every region, regardless of what the individual demands are in that region. And we can't even afford to do what we're doing now. So let's reform it before the bond rating agencies say, that's it. You guys have to close half your hospitals. Right?
It struck me as you were talking that physician recruitment has always been an ongoing issue. You find these pockets of areas around the province where they simply cannot recruit. There was a big problem in central Newfoundland, as we know, with obstetricians, gynecologists. You know, a big population, a big, huge area, and yet there were no OBGYN opportunities there for people who happen to be pregnant. So they had to go somewhere else. So would that work in those kinds of scenarios where it's difficult to recruit physicians, or is it speak more to the point that you were making, that if this was an area where this is going to take place, then you will see the physicians wanting to go there because they're going to get their full scope of practice.
Yeah, that's absolutely the issue. So, you know, from politically, and a lot of what we're talking about here, the reasons why we have these challenges is right now is because of politics, right? Every region wants it. You know, I'm from Stephenville. I grew up in Stephenville, and you know, if Corner Brook had something, Stephenville wants it too. And if Stephenville has something, well, then Corner Brook deserves it too, right? That's things. But if we can't afford what we're doing now, we have to open our minds and say, you know, if we're truly serious about providing the best possible health outcomes for people in the province, the way we're doing it right now by trying to everybody gets exactly the same thing everywhere. That's not sustainable. That's not working. So let's look at different ways. Let's explore different ways of doing that, and let's do it now before we hit the debt wall, before we get into a crisis, and somebody from the outside is determining the future of this province. You know, how bad would it be if our generation couldn't get its fiscal house in order, and we had to look to bond rating agencies to dictate how we operate as a province? That would be one of the most depressing and embarrassing things that the people's province would ever have to suck up.
And it's not like we haven't done it before.
Well, you know, it's a little over 80 years ago. We joined Canada, and we had somebody from the outside running our province. For me, and I think for most of the people in this province, that kind of a option is completely unacceptable. You know, the proud Newfoundlander, we can deal with our own problems. We don't need somebody from the outside to tell us how to do it. But what we do need right now is leadership on this issue, because it is the biggest crisis facing this province.
Does politics get in the way of making these decisions?
Yeah, absolutely it does. And that was one of the big conversations we had at our summit on this. So we had a couple of ex-politicians, ex-finance ministers talk about, you know, some of the challenges. And this is not a comment about Liberal Party or PC Party or NDP Party. It's across all political stripes. It's the structure of our political system. Our political system rewards short-term decision-making over long-term decision making for the province. So a politician, political party, they're in power, borrowing money in the short term that will you know, somebody else will pay it back to cut ribbons before an election is something that everybody knows about. And we've been in that environment for so long now that we're at $14 billion net debt. Who's going to pay that $14 billion back? It's going to be our generation and our children's generation. We don't want to do that. And the other thing that happens in politics is we have this polarization that happens. And we talked about that just a few minutes ago. So, you know, we've been saying, look, we need to reform government services and programs and services in order to make them affordable. And the way that's being framed by political parties and by the government is, if we were to do what the Employers Council wanted, there'd be thousands of layoffs and we'd shut down hospitals or whatever. That's just ridiculous. It's polarizing. It's playing on people's fears. And what we're saying is that's not what we want. But we don't want to go bankrupt as a province either. There is some happy medium, and it's up to our political leaders to provide that leadership, provide a credible plan, and move forward. And I would add, there is precedent. There is historical precedent in this country. Paul Martin did it. Janice McKinnon, Roy Romano did it in Saskatchewan in the 90s. Even in our own province, Clyde Wells, there was the collapse of the fishery. The federal funding got cut. They made huge changes to government spending to try and attempt to make that sustainable. And Clyde Wells got elected with a larger majority. It is possible to do it, but it requires politicians to level with people, explain to them, say, no, not everything is not good. There are huge challenges here, but we have a plan for a brighter future in this province. And if you stick with us, if you support us, we'll get through this and things will be much better. And that is what we need today in Newfoundland and Labrador more than ever.
Richard Alexander, the Executive Director of the Newfoundland and Labrador Employers Council, my in-studio guest this afternoon. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back on Target St. John's. I had to think about the name of the show that time. I almost said open line. Richard Alexander is the executive director of the Newfoundland and Labrador Employers Council. We're talking a little bit about the province's fiscal situation. And just before Christmas, you and I spoke, and we addressed this earlier, or we hinted at it earlier, that you said that 2020 is going to be a pivotal year for the province's growing deficit situation. Tell us what you mean by that.
Yeah, so the second last time that the bond rating agencies looked at government's plan, which was to reduce expenditures quite significantly, and government kept pushing those reductions in spending further out in their plan. And they said they highlighted, the bond rating agencies, after downgrading, Moody's downgraded the province's credit rating, they cited execution risk, meaning in layman's terms, they don't have a lot of confidence that the government is actually going to execute it. So it's all coming to a head now because their plan to return to balance this coming year was to have a deficit of $250 million. They haven't done the expenditure reductions that they had in their own plan, and as a result, we're looking at potentially a budget of with a deficit of $1 billion this year. So the reaction from the bond rating agencies as a result of that should be, from what folks that operate in the financial sector, should be quite negative. And if it's negative, then that means that there could be a significant impact on our the rate that we get for borrowing, which will then put additional strain on government's limited resources. So the interesting thing, though, is that because the premier is stepping down, and the premier mentioned that he wants the incoming premier, leader of the Liberal Party, to put his or her own stamp on the budget, doesn't leave a lot of time for this budget. So what I think may actually happen is we might not even see a budget this year. What we might get is the government will pass an interim supply bill, which will push the budgeting further out to avoid having to have a big discussion about government not hitting its targets. I could be wrong, but that is what is a distinct possibility, and it's sort of the timing of everything looks like that's what might happen. But I think overall, in terms of dealing with this issue, I think the fact that we're going to have a change in leadership in the Premier's office, I think we have this budgeting issue coming up in March or April, and we'll have another election. I think that represents an opportunity for us to really ask our politicians to develop a credible plan and move that plan forward, and then whatever party forms the next government can move forward with a mandate from the people to actually start dealing and resolving this fiscal issue we have.
It's going to be a tough job. Do you think they have the stomach for it?
Well, like I said, there's lots of historical precedent. If you listen to Janice McKinnon, she said, we're getting very close to that point where somebody from the outside is going to deal with it. So we can either wait till it's a major crisis and somebody from the outside will tell us how many hospitals have to close, or we can take steps now to modernize the way we deliver programs and look at what government is involved in and what they should be involved in and what they shouldn't be involved in. So we have ferries that are run in partnership with the private sector that cost very little. And then we have a publicly run ferry to St. Brendan's, which cost $85 million, $85 million ferry to service 150 people. Do we really want our government? Is that a core operation of government? Or can we find a less expensive way to deliver that program and service? And I think that's where we need to be.
Does the business community have a role to play in that? I mean, if somebody offered up, the opportunity to do that ferry, if it's profitable to them, could we not work on it in that sort of way so that people still have the service and someone is benefiting?
Yeah, I think there's lots of precedent both within our province. We have private organizations that deliver, private companies that deliver ferry service on the south coast of the island. For instance, BC Ferries is delivered by the private sector. There's governments are very good at regulation and setting the standard, but generally governments are very poor at improving service and lowering costs. So these partnerships, like with ferry services and deliveries of government services, tend to work very, very well for the public. The public actually gets better outcomes because it divides up those responsibilities between those two and takes advantage advantages of the strength of each organization. And we've seen lots of examples of that. So, you know, in Alberta, you can go and renew your driver's license at a kiosk in the mall without having to go out to Mount Pearl to stand in line for hours to get a picture taken. You know, we do things very inefficiently in Newfoundland, Labrador, and it's about time that we looked at modernizing, improving outcomes for citizens.
The provincial government has started to move more towards this P3 model, so-called P3 model, and of course they opened the new long-term care facility in Corner Brook just this past week. They're discussing it now as we speak. Is that kind of what you're talking about, or is that a direction we should be heading in? Because traditionally the whole P3 model has been, you know, not entirely embraced by some people.
Yeah, there's some special interest groups that are concerned about the P3 model. But the reality is that for decades, public-private partnerships have been utilized right across Canada with high levels of success. And people wouldn't even realize some of the things that have been built through that model on time and on budget. Cheaper, better outcomes for citizens of the province, which is why they continue to be used. Like the Confederation Bridge, the PEI, that's a public-private partnership that built that. Many people don't realize that. There are many, many examples right across this country. Can you find one or two examples where they didn't work as well as you wanted to? Yes, you can. But if you look at all the examples across this country, they have delivered high quality outcomes at lower cost for citizens. Like some of the long-term care facilities, that even the one that was just opened here in this province, that is a better facility by partnering with the private sector than if government had gone it alone, right? One of the things that people talk about in terms of the fiscal crisis, our government doesn't have money to be investing into these types of things. And if provinces like Ontario and Manitoba and the other provinces are saying, look, we don't need to use public capital, taxation revenue, to build these things, when there's private capital available in the market that is willing and able to do it, and do it at a lower cost for taxpayers with a better quality product at the end of it, then why wouldn't we want our government to take advantage of those opportunities? And it's great to see that this government is doing that.
We also have a long history of providing, and I don't know if it's the same in other provinces or not, I simply don't follow things that closely, but we have a history in this province of providing big government money to private industry to get off the ground in an area where perhaps they might not normally have chosen to do business there. Is that a good model?
Well, I think the research shows clearly that governments are very, very poor at picking winners and losers. Every government since Joey Smallwood has talked about diversifying the economy, and we're going to invest money into this industry, and we're going to try to grow this sector and this industry. And I think the reality is that governments have been very poor at doing that. The best thing that governments can do is to allow the entrepreneurs of Newfoundland and Labrador to do what they do best, which is identify their own opportunities, invest capital, invest their own capital, and compete. And Newfoundland and Labrador firms are not afraid to compete. And once you do that, if government creates an environment that makes Newfoundland and Labrador an attractive place to invest, then we'll see that investment come. But unfortunately right now, and the people that I represent, a lot of them are quite concerned about the future of the province. And capital is mobile. They can choose to invest in other provinces, and some of them are doing that. But they want to invest in Newfoundland and Labrador. But when you have extremely high tax burdens, high transportation costs, high utility costs, the business case in some cases makes it very difficult. And if the business community doesn't see that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that this fiscal situation, there's a plan to resolve this fiscal situation, things are going to get better. It's going to be easier for me to attract people to come and work at my company. People want to stay in Newfoundland, Labrador. Without that plan, it's very, very difficult for them to have confidence and stability to be able to invest. So, the fiscal situation of the province impacts everything in Newfoundland, Labrador.
demographics, a big thing here. We have an aging population, not a lot of babies being born, not a lot of people coming in and staying. Our immigration rates, I understand, have improved somewhat, but they're still very, very low, especially when you compare it to other areas of Atlantic Canada even. So what is the answer there? Do we have a population problem, and how do we address that?
Yeah, so we absolutely have the oldest population. Our population is shrinking faster than other provinces in Canada. And when your population shrinks, that means that your economy will shrink, because the number of people that we have, particularly of working age and childbearing age in Newfoundland and Labrador, is the number of people in that cohort is less than other provinces. So lots of provinces have that challenge, but Newfoundland and Labrador is particularly severe. So think of it this way in terms of the provincial treasury: fewer taxpayers, fewer people working, fewer tax people paying taxes. So revenue to the provincial treasury goes down, exasperates the problem even further. Right? So let me say this before I talk about the demographics. This government has increased their immigration targets, and they are coming close to hitting those targets. They've done better than the previous administration, so I give them full marks on that. But our targets are still nowhere near where they need to be to deal with the out-migration and the population decline that we have in this province. We would have to double what we're doing now in order to do that. So how does a government do that? So there's a couple of things that I'll talk about. First is Newfoundland and Labrador has to be an attractive place to live and work and do business in order to attract people to come here.
And raise a family.
You know, there's lots of great things about this province, but people have choices if they're choosing where to live. And after the 2016 budget, when we saw the taxation in this province increase to close to $1 billion in increased taxes and things like that, we did some public opinion polling, and it said that essentially, if you're between the ages of 18 and 35, you make over $75,000 a year, you have a post-secondary education, basically one in two people have said they've thought about leaving the province. Since 2016, we've seen a drop in population of 8,664 people. So we have essentially, since 2016, we have essentially lost the population of Portugal Cove, St. Phillips. And that trend is continuing. So one of the best things that governments can do to make the place look attractive and increase immigration is to have a solid fiscal situation, competitive taxations. We have one of the highest personal tax burdens of any province in Canada. That makes it difficult for businesses to attract people to come and work. So I talked to one veterinarian clinic. That's a member of ours that was trying to recruit new vets out of vet school to come and work in Newfoundland and Labrador. They did the math, and they said, wow, in order for me to go to Newfoundland and Labrador, you'd have to pay me this amount more in my annual salary to make up the difference in taxation of what I'm paying here in this province. And the owner of the vet clinic said, I just can't afford to do that. I'd have to increase everybody's salary, right? The oil and gas industry has challenges trying to recruit people because we are known as a high tax jurisdiction. And it's not enough to compare ourselves in terms of attracting immigrants and attracting people to come and live and work here, compare ourselves to PEI or to Nova Scotia. We're competing against jurisdictions that have traditionally, you know, oil and gas based, natural resource based, jurisdictions like Alberta with very, very low taxation rates. So it's incumbent upon us, if we're interested in growing our population, we have to look attractive on the taxation side. And there has to be a credible plan to resolve the fiscal situation. Because people know that if the government is overspending, if we have high levels of debt, that will mean even higher taxes in the future. And that's a very difficult thing for people that are thinking about coming to Canada to say, oh, yes, I'll move to Newfoundland and Labrador. I love paying taxes. That's not the way people think.
But does it come down to that? Because we have other intangible qualities here. We have a beautiful place around us. We have fresh air. We don't have, you know, the kind of crime and congestion on the roads and all of those kinds of things that people battle and complain about. And, you know, you don't live to work. You hopefully work to live. So, you know, are there intangibles that people are just not enough people interested in that? It just comes down to the bottom line.
No, I think anybody who lives here and chooses to live here, like myself and yourself, I mean, we do so because, you know, both of us have options, but we do so because this is a phenomenal place to live. But, you know, one of the big factors for us living here is we grew up here. So when you're attracting immigrants, it's a beautiful place, low crime rates and all those things are appealing. but they don't have that same level of attachment there. So we need to be aggressive in how we market those things that we do have. And we have been successful. Like I said, this government has done better than the previous administration in doing that, but we still need to move forward. But one of the challenges, and we've done a lot of work on this, and the public relations person that I have in my that works for us has put a lot of work into this, Jacqueline Sullivan, done a lot of research because we've been asked to do it. But again, the fiscal challenges and the lack of fiscal management that we have in our provincial treasury is playing a role in this. So we've seen a disconnect between the business community who want immigrants and who believe in immigration and the Department of Immigration in our provincial government. We've seen a disconnect between that. And businesses are saying, look, we don't know where to go. We don't know how to do this. And government is saying, well, we've got all these programs. How come business aren't following through on these programs or coming to us and looking to it. So after some research, what we've seen is that, the Department of Immigration is really about processing claims, and they are taxed to the limit in terms of processing the number of claims they are now. And if we were to double that, that would mean doubling the number of people working in that department just to process the claims. And because we have this fiscal situation, government is not in a position to do it. So it all goes back again to good fiscal management. So do we want to grow our population? If the answer to that is yes, and I hope that it's yes, then we need to restructure how we do spend in programs and services and redirect towards the long-term strategic thinking. Like we were talking about politicians don't think long-term, they think short-term. Investing in immigration and doing that outreach. There are very few people that are engaged in doing outreach to employers to explain to them the system of immigration and how they can fill gaps in their companies through immigration. And if we're serious about this, that is the approach that other provinces are taking. And to quote a federal cabinet minister that came to speak to us, other provinces are eating our lunch for us.
It's interesting. It brought to mind a story that happened here, actually. Government had made a big announcement on immigration, and we had covered the story. We had a reporter down there, and there was a big, hoopla and all that sort of thing, lots of pictures and images and quotes and all of those kinds of things. But in the end, there was no link to where you can get the information that you needed. So a gentleman actually came into our front lobby from Senegal, I think he was from, and he and his wife wanted to set up a business here, but wanted more information. So he had his cell phone there, and he's showing me the story. And he said, where's the information? I said, I'll get that for you now. And I went into the newsroom and I made a phone call to the department. I said, I have a gentleman here looking for the information. Oh, we don't have that just yet. So it was very interesting. It opened my eyes to a few things at that particular moment. Then I had to go back out to this gentleman, and I was his point of contact, and say, they don't have that information yet. I don't know when it's coming out.
Yeah, we've seen the exact same thing. So Jacqueline Sullivan in our office was doing work on this and talking to employers, and all of a sudden she ends up being an advocate for some of these employers and dealing with some of these issues that employers are having. And there are good people working up at the Department of Immigration, and they're well-intentioned. They want to do this or whatever, but they just don't have the resources right now because of the fiscal situation to do what needs to be done.
Executive Director of the Newfoundland and Labrador Employers Council, Richard Alexander, my in-studio guest this afternoon. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. The Executive Director of the Newfoundland and Labrador Employers Council, Richard Alexander, is my in-studio guest this afternoon. We've been talking about the province's fiscal situation and what we can expect, I guess, in the year ahead, 2020 being a pivotal year, according to you, Richard. And you indicated earlier that we may not see a budget, which is very interesting indeed, and we don't really have time to explore that further. But just touch on that again, if you will.
Yeah, so I think, the fact that the premier premier stepping down, and he said he wants the new incoming premier, leader of the Liberal Party, to put their own stamp on the budget. And given the high risk of this budget in terms of the bond rating agencies and what they're waiting to see, I think it's entirely probable that we may get to a situation where, because of the timing and there's not enough time, that the budget may be just delayed or pushed off until maybe even after the election, and government would just bring in an interim supply bill and have that pass in the House and keep everything going as is without having to go through all the issues with the budget. I could be completely wrong at that, but it just seems seems to me that all the stars are aligning, that that might actually happen.
It'll be interesting to watch, for sure. We've been talking about a lot of the things that government could be doing right, what it's doing wrong, what needs to happen next. And all of these messages tend to leave people feeling very depressed, if you will. And when Bob Hallett was in the other day, it seems to me that government really does operate by making sure that it doesn't, whatever decisions it makes, doesn't have a dampening effect on the economy and on consumer confidence, because we all know consumer confidence is absolutely important when it comes to keeping the economy humming and that sort of thing. But is there any good news? Are we doing anything right? Is there a message here that we can give people to say there is hope?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I get to the good news, I'll say, government's lack of a credible plan is dampening the economy. The business community, with all due respect to the finance minister, has no confidence in the finance minister's plan to return us to balance. That's the reality. That is causing the doom and gloom. That is dampening the economy. But Pedro Antunes, the chief economist that we from the conference board that we brought into our summit, he showed the economic outlook for the province, and it's actually good. It's actually better than what it was a number of years ago. The oil patch, the optimism in the oil patch, and new wells and new production coming online, it looks like the economy of Newfoundland and Labrador is not tanking. We'll actually see somewhere between 3 and 3.5% GDP growth annually moving forward, which is an absolute great thing to have. But it is still, that economic growth is still not enough to cover off the billions of excess dollars that we're borrowing and spending. It still won't cover that off or even pay for the debt that we've already accumulated. But the other message from Pedro Antunes and from Janice McKinnon is it's not too late for us to act in this province. We've got a lot of good things happening here. The economic outlook is good, but we do need to act before it is too late. And I guess the silver line is that, if we as a province, if we start to think about reforming how government operates, that doesn't have to be portrayed in a bad light. That is the solution. Reforming the way government delivers health and education and all other services, ferries and all that stuff, that is the solution. That will lead us to a brighter future. And if we can get away from this polarizing conversation of we're going bankrupt or we're going to destroy the public service and look at what we really need to do, I think we'll get there. The other positive thing that since we've been working on this over the last number of years is, and we talked about it before, people in the healthcare system want to have these off-the-record conversations with us and tell us what they think. The good people that work within our public service, within the healthcare system, within education, whatever, they know what to do. They know what needs to be done. They just need to be given the political will and the go-ahead to do it. We don't need province-wide consultations with ideas of how to government to save money. We don't need a royal commission. We don't need any of these things. We just have to allow the people that run our healthcare system say, what would you do to reform the health system to make this sustainable? They know what to do. They just need to be done. So there are the solution is there, the appetite is there within the public service, I believe. Our economic outlook is looking good. I think what we need now, we just need the political courage and the leadership to be able to develop that plan to bring us to that point.
So we need a government that's willing to listen to people that to now feel like they've been silenced or stifled?
Well, I think, and again, this is not a shot at the Liberals, not a shot at the PCs, not a shot at the NDP. This is the way politics is. And unfortunately, they think short-term as opposed to long-term. So we've been in a world for the last number of years where the PCs and the Liberals have been sort of pushing the problem out further down the road, trying to make the other guy do the dirty work. That's where we are. And once one guy says we're going to do something positive, try and reform spending, the other party attacks them. But what we have right now is we have a tremendous opportunity politically. We have a change in leadership in the Premier's office. We'll probably have an election within a year. And so we have the opportunity for the people of the province to say, look, enough is enough. Develop a credible plan to bring us to a brighter future. We will support you. And they can get elected with a mandate to do exactly that. And you'll see a bright future. Newfoundland and Labrador can be the best place to live, work, and do business in Canada.
There's a theme that I keep hearing from all of my guests whenever we talk politics, and that is that the political system needs to be changed. It needs to be reformed. And it seems like you're echoing some of those sentiments as well.
Yeah, I've thought for a long time now. You know, our organization, we're an advocacy organization, so we work, we do government relations, we talk to politicians. You know, the finance minister, John Hagee, minister of health, the premier, all these people they're good people, and I believe that they get into politics with the best of intentions. But when you get into the political field, they quickly realize that, you know, it's a very difficult. It's a very difficult job, and the structure of our political system is such that power is consolidated in the premier's office. MHAs have very little power. They are representing the interests of their local. So, you know, we want a hockey rink because the community down the road has one. Don't close our hospital beds, even though they're empty beds. So they're expected to go and advocate for these things and the short-term nature of politics, right? But having said all that, I think even within our current political system, I think there is opportunity. Like John Crosby, late John Crosby said to me one time, he said, Richard, so what's the point of getting elected if you're not going to do anything?
Richard Alexander, our in-studio guest this afternoon on Target St. John's. On Monday, we're going to have Brilliant Labs in. They're doing some great stuff in the province's schools right now. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great weekend.